She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And remember, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Our show today is made possible due to the generous support of Discount Cab. Their promise is to be safe, clean, and green in all that they do. And their company model must be working because they are really spreading all over the country. And from where I sit, I'm really happy because they're giving Uber a run for their money. We appreciate their support and for all everything they do in every community in which they work. So go Discount Cab, Total Transit. Okay, everybody, take a deep breath, sit back, and get ready for a one-on-one with Seth Godin. It's a Mrs. Green dream come true, I admit it, and everybody who is within my circle of love knows I was jumping up and down when Seth said yes. So here you go. There are going to be some reasons why. Seth Godin has made a major impact on my life and on the lives of millions of others, both personally and professionally, in truly significant ways. We're not talking about fluff here. We're talking about from the core of your being. Seth Godin helps inspire you every day. The words that greet you on his homepage, go make something happen. And there are days when I don't feel like it at all. And Seth is there in the back of my head saying, go make something happen, even when you don't feel like it. He agreed to be on the show when I wrote to him and invited him to talk with me about a blog he wrote on his birthday. And everybody who knows me knows my birthday is my favorite day of the year. Maybe it's because I come from a family of four. But he simply entitled the blog, Happy Birthday. And in that blog, he asked the question, is it possible for your birthday to change the world? Seth, thanks for saying yes.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Gina. Thanks for the work you've been doing day by day, year by year, making things better. It really matters.
And right back at you. So I want to give a little bit of background about you for listeners that might not know. Seth is the author of 18 books that have been bestsellers around the world and have been translated into more than 35 languages. He writes about post-industrial revolution, the way that ideas spread, marketing, quitting or not quitting, leadership, and most of all, changing everything. I think it's pretty amazing if you just go to Google and type the word Seth in, guess who pops up? It's one of the most popular blogs in the world. I read it every day. Seth, you are a content machine, but let's talk about the content of your blog on your birthday. Tell us the parrot story.
Well, you know, it's this whole thing sort of backfiring because I don't like talking about my birthday. But anyway, when I was 15, I asked my mom for a hint about what I was going to get for my birthday because I was hoping for a 10-speed bike. And she said, well, it has feathers. And I got all excited because I was going to get a parrot. Like, what could be better than getting a parrot for your birthday? Well, my birthday rolled around and I got a down blanket.
So there was the feather part.
Yeah, but, you know, down blanket. What are you going to do with a down blanket? Anyway, ever since then, I've been really aware of totems and ideas in our culture. So, you know, what is Valentine's Day? Where did it come from? Why do we celebrate it? How do we celebrate it? And the day that gets celebrated the most, other than Christmas, is birthdays, but they're spread out all around the year. So in working with the folks at Charity Water in New York, I helped work with them to create this idea that maybe on your birthday, instead of asking people to give you a gift, you could ask people to give Charity Water a donation. Because every time someone gives Charity Water $10, somebody who has never had clean water in their life gets clean water. Somebody who might die of diarrhea doesn't die. A family that might have been spending 6 hours a day walking to and from a dirty well now has the time to build a business or to create something of value. And it is an emergency kind of charity in that, you know, they put in a well and that starts things moving and it's urgent. I spend a lot of my time working on different kinds of longer-term causes, but I'm just so thrilled that so many people took me up on it. It's spreading fast, and there's almost 100,000 people now who have donated their birthday to Charity Water.
Yeah, that's the kind of numbers that blow my mind. And another number that blows my mind that I talk about on the show a lot, and I have, you know, we're facing epic droughts, as I call them, all over this country. 2,300 counties are registering as severe drought conditions. But when you go to the macro level, you know, that's awful. That's really awful that happening to this country. We have to look at it. But it's hard to believe that close to 750 million people around the world don't have access to clean water. And I didn't pull up the statistic about how many people die every day from waterborne illnesses. I mean, the numbers are staggering. Is that a huge piece of why you decided to focus on clean water for your birthday?
Well, you know, you at the beginning of our interview, you talked about the expression, go make something happen. It's just off key for me to stand up in a small village in Kenya and say to subsistence farmers, go make something happen. Because the thing they're making happen is feeding their family and staying alive. But here we are. If you have a laptop, you are living on the cutting edge of the world. You have access to 1 billion people. You have the same cutting edge tools as every organization has. You have the ability to put things into the world that change things. But it's so easy for us to take all of these systems for granted and whine about the fact that our storage unit doesn't have enough room in it for our stuff, or whine about the fact that, you know, we don't have a brand new iPhone, we have a 6-month-old iPhone. We have all these levers, tools, opportunities, and we're letting fear and complacency cause us to just sit back as opposed to leaning forward, my friend Cheryl might say, leaning in, and deciding that something it matters enough that we're willing to change it, that it matters enough that we're willing to say to people, here, I made this, and that we're willing to be criticized for the work we think is important.
And it's not always easy. And that's what, you know, your blog, some days it's like, I don't want to be out there making a difference and being the one that stands up and talk about it. And at parties, they're like, oh my gosh, Gina, I'm so sorry. We have styrofoam plates or whatever. But for the birthday piece, you're Seth Godin and you have a blog and people respond. You've earned that. You've built it. You feed us really good content. You show up every day. What about someone who wants to start spreading the word that they want nothing for their birthday and to give a donation? How do you start that? Just by when people say, what do you want for your birthday? Tell them to go to Charity Water?
Well, let me give you some insight as to the law of large numbers, because a lot of people do read my blog. If I write a blog post about a book, it will sell about 400 copies of that book on Amazon, which will make that book go to the top 50 on Amazon. 400 copies. That's all. There's nobody who's listening to this who couldn't sell 400 copies of a book if they put their mind to it. That the law of large numbers isn't what it used to be. It used to be that if Johnny Carson or Walter Cronkite decided to talk about something, they could change everything. It doesn't work that way anymore. What works now is people telling people telling people telling people. And we're all in a chain. And it's so easy to say, well, this is somebody else's job. Let John Stewart take care of this problem. Let Angelina Jolie take care of this problem. But everyone has a platform now. Everyone, even if you're just on Facebook, has a way to reach 10 people or 50 people or 100 people. So the opportunity isn't to say, I'm not big enough. It's to say, the lever I've got is already plenty big. If I can make a small dent with 3 people or 5 people or 20 people, drip by drip by drip, it all adds up. Those people who are apologizing to you about styrofoam, you have changed them because now they're mindful of it. And next time, they might not even need to apologize because next time, they may decide to take out their dishes.
And it really depends on the level of friendship, what I respond, how I respond to that. If it's one of my best friends, I say, really, Mary, are you serious? You're going to serve styrofoam and I'm one of your best friends, or I say to people, well, just think about small changes, and it's a whole different kind of approach. And since we talked a little bit off air and said, let's have some fun. Well, when I wrote my book, Seth, the biggest shocker to me is one you just hit on. I looked on Amazon, you know, how they have the author's page where you can get in behind the scene a little bit.
Yep.
And I was like 1,400,000 in Amazon. And it was, no, I was 500,000. And it was like a great ranking. I was in the top 50, and I looked at how many copies I sold that day, and it was like 30. So you're right about just do it, because you don't have to take on Amazon. You just have to write the book and get on there.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. A friend of mine was over for lunch yesterday. Her son is an animal rights activist. He's 18 or so. And he became a vegan 3 years ago. And he said quite respectfully to his family, I can't control what you do, but if you're going to eat meat, I'm not going to eat with you.
Wow.
And that act of conscience, of saying, I'm taking this seriously, it's not a fad in my life, I can't imagine hurting an animal, and sitting down with you while you do that is something I feel really uncomfortable with. And the fact is, that caused at least a few days a week his family to change their behavior, because he wasn't trying to change the whole world, he was trying to change five people. And that drip by drip, step by step approach is the only way our culture has ever changed.
Is one step at a time and not by a big mandate. So let's talk a little bit more about that. Change the culture, change the world, as you say. And a troublesome statistic for me that I don't want to be afraid of is about the disappearance or shrinking of the middle class. Can campaigns like the one you did for your birthday and creating that shift in consciousness have an impact on that and on the global community? It's a philosophical question, but one that I think about a lot. It's not good if the middle class shrinks.
Well, I think you've persistently exaggerated the power of one blog post by me, so let's just leave that aside.
Yeah, but I get to do that because it's my show. I love it.
There are things that I have done that have had more leverage than that. The middle class is an accident of economic history that was caused by the power of the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution was the greatest creator of wealth ever. And what it did was it made people go from the productivity of, I can make one teacup a day, to working with four other people, we can make 1,000 teacups a day. And that shift created wealth for the Andrew Carnegies of the world, but it also created wealth for the people on the assembly line at Ford Motor Company.
Right.
And there's no reason to believe that the industrial age will continue the way it was. In fact, we can see it fading everywhere we look. And there's also sort of an economic imperative in a connection economy, that the people who control the center of a connection are able to extract significant amounts of profit. So it is better to be a taxi dispatcher than to be a taxi cab driver. It is better to have a worldwide network of taxi dispatching apps than it is to be a local taxi dispatcher. That's the economics that are at work here. So the way the middle class is going to have a resurgence is not because we're going to come back to an industrial age. We're going to have a resurgence because individuals with a laptop will figure out how to be connectors, how to create value, how to build art, how to create movements, how to connect tribes, and get paid fairly for it. We will stumble as long as we are walking around saying, it's not fair, pay me more, because the selfish capitalist will never respond to that. But if we say, I have the ability to spread an idea, I am in the center of a circle, I create value by making things that people want, then we will get paid fairly.
And where in that conversation do you think the thing that struck me about this blog, you know what did, it's because of my journey as Mrs. Green. To me, the trajectory that we are really on in terms of climate change and the lack of human consciousness around that, Where does that conversation fit in terms of the general messaging that people do? Like, it's the place from which I come now because it's my divine appointment or whatever, but picking charity water mattered to me that you picked that. What about the responsiveness to climate change in general? To me, it's everybody's concern.
Well, it will be everyone's concern when it's too late. And before then, the problem is it is one of the most poorly marketed causes in history for a whole bunch of reasons. One is there's no one in charge of it. Two, it started from a place where marketers weren't involved. And three, because misguided corporate interests engaged in deliberate misinformation in order to put other ideas into the world when there weren't people who were aware of what was going on in counter-programming. So when the cigarette companies tried to undermine the anti-smoking thing, there were people who saw what was going on and successfully countered that story. But when people are making up all sorts of untruths about science, it's difficult for the movement to respond in a coordinated way that resonates with people. Human beings evolved over millions of years to be very concerned about a flood that's going to happen in an hour, to be very concerned about a bug that's about to bite you or a lion that's running through the village. But there's nothing that we are hardwired to be panicked about something that's going to happen in 20 years. And therefore, we have a long history of being bad at dealing with things that are going to happen in 20 years. Figuring out how to turn the true story, the narrative of what carbon is doing to the environment into something that translates into people taking action, that is difficult. I believe it is happening. I see it in lots of places, not just wealthy suburban communities, but I see it in some of the poorest places on Earth, where there is a cultural shift generally going in the right direction. I think it will start to accelerate when, unfortunately, the climate combines with the weather to remind us every single day that we have a real problem.
And what you said about the internet, the power of the internet, is what's helping that. And I think about just the 8 years since I've been doing my show, the change in the message of my guests and how it's being received. And I just interviewed Dana Gunders from Natural Resources, NRDC, Defense Council. And she was talking, she wrote a great book that's coming out in September about food waste. And Seth, when I started 7 years ago, nobody was talking about food waste. And now it is such a topic of conversation in restaurants, among my friends, among mommy bloggers. I mean, you name it. Wasting our food in our own homes, not just the global issue of world hunger. So that's where the power of the internet comes so front and center. And I'd like to read a quote and then go on another philosophical little sidebar. But T.E. Lawrence, I have this up in my office, and it's about dreaming. And those who dream by night in the dusty recesses of their minds wake in the day to find that all was vanity. But the dreamers of the day are dangerous men, for they may act their dreams with open eyes and make it possible. And to me, this is not just goofy praise from someone that admires and respects you, but how do you make the magic happen and get people to move from, oh, that felt really good, I really loved reading that blog, to action, to become dangerous men and women? I mean, that's what you ask us to do a lot, dangerous in the most wonderful sense. Live on the edge, go do something. What do you want to make sure is in your message that we are listening to?
Well, I guess, 10 years ago I stopped keeping track of things like traffic and book sales.
Yes.
And SEO. And by making that choice, I started by making that choice so I would be a happier person. But one of the side effects of that choice is that I am okay with tension. Tension the silence of tension, of just leaving a gap, the tension of pointing out what the emperor is wearing or not wearing, the tension of a young man not eating dinner with his family. It's tension that is necessary if we're going to make change happen. Because change is risky, change comes with fear, change might fail, change could lead to the end of everything. So we don't eagerly seek out change. So change and tension always come together. And I'm okay with creating tension in the work I do, even though I know that means some people won't get it. And being okay with disappointing some people is the only way to create a movement. And I'm not creating a movement, but you are, and you do your best work when only 10% or 20% or 30% of the people who hear it get excited. Because if you say something that excites everyone, you haven't said much at all.
It's so true, and that's the message of tribes. We need you to lead us. That's when my brother handed me a copy of that. I think he would choke me if I didn't tell everybody it's my brother that turned me on to Seth Godin. Thank you, Brian, for that. But what you remind me of, what the words in that book remind me of, I am not looking for likes. I'm looking for people that are tribal members. It's a totally different mindset and a place. I've taken posts down on Facebook when I thought, I'm just doing this to get more likes, and I don't really care about that. Is that the place that is one you want to inspire people from which to come?
Well, exactly. And, you know, when you think back over this long journey you've been on, you are finding your best supporters and your biggest impact when you are doing things and saying things that don't necessarily make everyone in the room stand up and cheer. And that's been true for every movement. It's been true for the gay rights movement. It's been true for the civil rights movement. It's been true for movements that involve, you know, companies growing up or cultures shifting. And that willingness to create tension is not easy to find. But when we find someone who's doing it, we've also found someone who's making change happen.
Okay, so this leads me to the next, everything I always wanted to ask Seth. The topics that you cover, you couldn't list them because you never know what's going to show up in your inbox today from Seth Godin. Where do you get your inspiration? I mean, I imagine you sitting there reading like 8 books a day, which I know you don't have the time to do. But what inspires you to come up with a topic every single day, 7 days a week, sometime with great links? Where does it come from? Is this a question you can even answer?
It's a question I get asked all the time, and I get great pleasure in pointing out what a bad question it is. That's what it is.
And I'm like, oh, darn, other people ask him that. It's so cliche that...
The right question is not where do I get all my good ideas. It's where do I get all my bad ideas. Because I have more bad ideas than most people. And if people are willing to have a lot of bad ideas, they'll have no trouble at all finding a good one in that pile. So I know I'm going to get a privilege tomorrow to blog something. And I'll write 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 ideas. And one of them will end up being a blog post. You don't see the bad ones, but most people are sitting around saying, I don't have any good ideas. Well, of course you don't have any good ideas, but you're censoring everything before you can find out if it's good or bad. And that's why I'm so eager to share my method. If people got in the habit of writing every day, and if people got in the habit of putting as many bad ideas in front of themselves as they could, the amount of good ideas we got would go through the roof.
And it so touches me when you talk about not being afraid or being fearless, or however you put it. Because I've written some blogs recently. To me, I'm onto the broadest message and definition of sustainability. And you can't have that conversation, in my opinion, without talking about social justice. A lot of the great conferences I've been to recently, it's an expanded definition that goes way beyond eating healthy food and not eating meat and recycling, but social justice. And I wrote a blog about it, and believe me, I got pushback, even from some of my sponsors. And they said things like, keep to writing about clean water and blah, 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 blah. And I, with one sponsor in particular, I said, are you serious? Like, are you paying me to say certain messages? Because I'm not for sale. And that took guts on my part, because every one of us needs sponsors that's, or, you know, people that are going to believe in the message and help support, you know, the vision. So it's not always easy, and you have to be willing to take the shot.
That's so brave and so true. I want to just clarify one thing, and I know we don't have much more time, but I am not fearless, and I don't know anyone who is. Fearless means without fear. What I am arguing is that we can dance with our fear.
Right.
That our fear is a compass. That when we listen to the fear and realize it's pointing us in the direction of important work, then we're doing something important. And then when we do it, even though we are afraid, that's when we're doing something brave.
I love that expression, feel the fear and do it anyway. That was from some great book I read, I don't know how long ago. What are the important things? Like, this is very personal, but what about your kids? Where are they in the world of Seth Godin and showing up for feel the fear and do it anyway? And how do they respond to, you know, you invite people into your home and you have, you know, contests for come and learn with Seth. Can you give a little insight onto the personal part?
Well, you know, I decided a long time ago I'd let my kids speak for themselves. So all I like to say is I am super proud of who they are becoming and who they are. In terms of contests and stuff, actually, I'm really allergic to being a prize. And I am thrilled that I have hosted lots of people here in my little office for schools that have lasted from 2 days to 6 months. And being able to do that face-to-face with people is a privilege. This work that I do engages me, thrills me. It is really a joy to be able to do it. And I think a lot of us have the ability to choose to become excited about the work we do as opposed to merely insisting that the work we do excites us. And I think if people can flip that in their head and turn the opportunity they have today, the leverage they have today, into their passion, they will suddenly discover they have a job they're passionate about.
And there's such freedom in that, if you ask me. That's what I feel like, freedom instead of going to a job. We have about 2 minutes left, and I want to ask you, I did a Kickstarter, and it was really tough for me. Our whole team worked it. We made it happen. It was successful. Why did Seth Godin decide to do a Kickstarter?
Well, it was early in the evolution of Kickstarter. I wanted to do two things. One, make a statement about tribes and how you could build and organize a group of people so that Kickstarter worked the way it was supposed to, as opposed to it being just a store for strangers. And two, I wanted to show authors how we could send a message to bookstores and publishers and online stores. Because if you can organize just 5,000 people to get behind an idea, all of a sudden the rest of the world lines up. 5,000 people isn't that many. 5,000 people is enough to get you on the New York Times bestseller list. 5,000 people is enough to get you at the counter at a store. We're all so busy imagining if we throw something over a transom, we forget to just walk through the door.
And that's always your message. It's like one small step. You don't start and say, I'm going to get 5,000 followers. You start, I'm going to show up as me and begin to build the tribe. That is, to me, the most important takeaway. So everybody, I have had one of my bucket list items checked off. I am not blushing. I am proudly saying this is a one-on-one with Seth Godin. I invite all of our listeners to check out SethGodin.com. And if you're not already signed up, become a member of his tribe because it'll make your life a better place. Seth Godin, thanks for showing up in my life. And everybody stay here with us. We have another half hour of Reflections from Mrs. Green. Thank you, Seth Godin.
Thank you, Gina. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, everybody, that was a great interview with Seth Godin. I know I sounded a little bit goofy, but when you get to interview one of your mega heroes, I mean, I really didn't want to be goofy on the show at all. I wanted to be respectful and admire what he's doing and spread the word because he is a game changer. He is a world changer. So I meant it when I said check him out at SethGodin.com. No matter what you're doing in life, if you are have the very important role of being a stay-home mom, there's great tips for how to be a better parent and the way that you want to show up as a role model for your own kids. I mean, he's an amazing person, 18 books, and he's so humble about the things that he has done. So I don't know if you're ready for this, but I hope you are, and I really hope I can pull it off. We are going to have a one-on-one with Mrs. Green, which I have never done. And as with many of the good ideas from Mrs. Green's world, it started from a team member. And most of you that have been listening to me for any time whatsoever know that I do praise my team. The Mrs. Green team is an amazing, important part of why this can happen and why we get such great guests. So when I was talking to Kelly King, who's our show producer, and I said, what should we do for the second half hour of Seth Godin? And she took a deep breath and she said, talk about Mrs. Green. I think it should be you. And I think it should be you sharing your journey with listeners and with people that are a part of your tribe. So I am really going to try for the next 28 minutes to keep you interested, to share things that are from very deep within my heart, up close and personal. Mrs. Green, unchecked, unedited, and here I come. So let's talk about my team. There's a huge production piece to doing the shows. And there is my ever-loving husband, who never says a word on air, who does the shows with me. Every single show since I started the Mrs. Green journey. And he records the shows, does the editing. And I don't have to go through every tribal member, but he is the co-pilot on this journey. And I really, really want to show my appreciation on the air and certainly not ask him to say a word because he's never going to say a word on the air. But people that know us, it'll give you a chuckle. But it's the silent behind the team members. I tell my team, I don't know what that is when it's an issue on the website. I never look behind the curtain. So once the curtain is closed, Mrs. Green shows up and hand me a microphone, and hopefully I can talk about something that's important and relevant and something that will inspire you to change. So let's start with how did I start the Mrs. Green journey? And the truth is, it was a journey. It was building, and I had no idea what was happening. I was being lined up for what I call my divine assignment that you just don't get to say no to. So it culminated. There were like telltale signs, but it culminated on a trip I took to the rainforest in Peru. And we were in small boats. I don't want anybody to envision me going down the Amazon in a big tour boat with a flush toilet because that was not the case. I went by myself. I knew one person that was on the trip, and it took me a lot of courage to think about going to the rainforest. I was afraid of the bugs and the snakes and things that go thump in the night, none of which realized it was not like that at all. And we were deep in the forest. But I was in the rainforest, and we were all silently going down a tributary, like literally in the middle of nowhere. And I started to see the devastation and the impact of deforestation. And when you think of trees, if you're in the United States and you've never been to a rainforest or never been to a redwood forest, our trees are not really big and thick and wide, and you can't live in the bottom of one for the most part, and you can't live on the tops of trees, but we're talking mega trees. And it sounds kind of funny to say this, but what I was struck with was, yes, the impact of cutting down these forests and these trees that will never come back. It's not like 50 years or 100 years or 1,000 years. The impact is devastating because once the trees are cut and the roots removed,
the rain starts and you see all of the impact of the rain and the erosion of the soil on lands that have been inhabited since the beginning of time. And the people, I remember this one scene in the rainforest where there was a huge cut and a wound. It ended up feeling like a wound to me. I didn't wail and cry and scream, but I was sobbing inside and seeing this family with their tiny little hut in the middle of a vast area of land where the soil was eroding rapidly because it's the rainforest. And that's how they made their living. That's how they bartered. That's how they fed their children. And for sometimes $300, sometimes $3,000, that land is bought. And it's not even for the lumber. A lot of the trees are burned. It's for to make way for cattle, or in many cases now it's for palm oil because that's our cheapest, fastest ingredient. So that happened. I went to the rainforest. And then I came home, and my husband is like, okay, where are you going tonight? And I said, I don't know. I'm going to this thing called the Pachamama Alliance. It's like, okay, what's up with that? And my daughter Emily and her friend Carly and Carly's mom were hosting this event that is put on. It wasn't an event. It was a sharing by the Pachamama Alliance, whose mission is preservation of the rainforest. And they work with mostly a tribe in Ecuador and the tribal chiefs and the government to stop the deforestation in Ecuador. And of course, they have partnerships all around the world. So I became such a major, it shifted everything for me because they didn't talk about just the deforestation of the rainforest. They talk about waste. Where are we putting it? How much we are producing and where is it all going to go? So one of the women in the narrative, it was a 3-hour presentation, said, you know, she asked people when they have their cups in their hand from Starbucks, where are you going to throw that cup? And they say they're going to throw it away. And she said, there is no more away. And so that was the beginning of my absolute and positive fixation with going to landfills and to recycling plants, because I have to see it and feel it and understand the massive amount of waste that we are producing and where is it all going to go. And I think that's a major theme that I have written about, try to raise awareness about and keep it going. Where is the waste going to go? Okay, let's shift to a minute for what my show is not about. And it was a very conscious decision when I first started on Clear Channel that I would not use the term global warming. And there was a reason for that. It wasn't because I was afraid. It was because it tends to polarize people. People think of global warming and it becomes a Democrat or a Republican. And now I openly talk about climate change because it doesn't seem to polarize people. I believe we are in a scary place. The trajectory we're on is really scary. But the most important part of the message is one in which we can all participate, and that is being the change. So we are, climate change is serious, it's accelerating, we're wasting, we're driving too many cars, we're not caring enough about pollution, and that's all the, you know, kind of people start going blah, blah, blah. I don't want people to go blah, blah, blah. I want people to get excited and to know that what they do, especially after hearing Seth Godin, is you are the leader of your own tribe. And what does that look like for you? And it may never show up on Facebook. It may never show up in a blog post, but it might show up in the way you entertain. It might show up in the way you shop. It might show up in what you bring to a party. And there are all different kinds of ways that we can show up to be a change for climate change, slowing it down a little bit, excuse me, and being a part of the journey of change. So I often use the phrase that this is a journey of a lifetime, and I'm going to pause here and take a little drink of water. And because it's one-on-one with Mrs. Green, it's all good. So this is my journey of a lifetime. This is my swan song. This is what I believe I was being trained to do my whole life without knowing it. When you get to interview people from all over the world about every topic you can imagine, and I tell people it's like from cradle to grave, but it's really from cradle to cradle. It's every step of the way, making a change, being a part of the journey. And I write a lot to know better is to do better. So one of the major intentions of my show is helping people know better, because I really believe that in the core of our being, everybody wants to do better. I find things out that I want to share. Hopefully you want to share them and say, oh my gosh, I listened to this podcast, or oh my gosh, look what Mrs. Green wrote on Facebook, and really be inspired to share it so that we can all do better, because I believe there's hope and I believe that that is what it's going to take. So where do you start? That's what people say to me. It's so overwhelming. There's so many things. The noises in my head. Well, I have the same noises. So where do you start to be a good global steward of the planet? And it's so easy. It's so, so easy. You start with a single step. And we all get to decide which is the first step that we want to take. What do I want to do today to make a difference? Is today a good day for a 5-minute shower? Maybe, maybe not. Is today a day that I want to go and support a locally owned business? But it's that shift in consciousness that begins the journey to being a good steward of the planet. And it shouldn't be overwhelming. It doesn't have to be overwhelming. It's quieting the voices and saying, okay, where do I want to begin to take my first step? So I'm going to go through a couple of topics that I think are good ones to consider starting with. And my first one is food, because you might think it would be water, but I think I like to eat more than I like to drink. And the food conversation is so vast and so impactful and so important, starting with your visit to the grocery store and looking at the patterns of buying that you have acquired during your whole life. Because the first step has to be, I acknowledge this. I understand that I have patterns, and taking a look at what those patterns are for you, for your healthy body, for the health of your family, and for the health of your children. And I'm talking about learning about what impact preservatives have on our body, learning what a GMO is. It's tossed around. It's a genetically modified organism. Does it hurt us? Does it hurt our bodies? Is there scientific evidence for that? And ask those questions. And as Seth said earlier, we can just Google everything. So the answers, and diverse answers, are at our fingertips. So we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. But you have to start by the inquiry, the journey question of, where do I want to go with this and this food journey? And it might be changing one single thing, like going to the Environmental Working Group website, which I tout. A week doesn't go by that I don't tout that, because they don't take any money from corporations. I trust their research. It's vast. It's extensive. It's on purpose. It's intentional. And you might say, okay, I'm going to start buying 3 of the vegetables that we eat certified organic. And then go to the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15 list on EWG and find out if those are the ones that you really even need to buy organic or not, and educate yourself. It might be looking at one of the things you love the most that you know is not necessarily the best thing for you. And the example that I can use is, it took me years to get off Diet Coke. And I say get off because I really believe I was addicted. Some people wake up and have their coffee. I would wake up and on my way to work, stop for a 32-ounce Diet Coke. And it so shocked people as I continued on this journey that I would do that, that I was, you know, I wasn't shamed, but I kind of said to myself, how are you being the change you want to see in the world? So I started with not having Diet Coke and that's, to me, a really good place for any of you out there that are still addicted. It's just kind of like drinking a toxic cocktail. There's nothing good about it for you. The other part might be meat. How much meat is in your diet, and why does it matter? And I will probably never be a vegetarian. I eat far less meat. Our family eats far less meat. And it's not just because I believe it's bad for my body. I believe that the impact that cattle has on the acceleration of climate change, the methane gas that they produce, the feedlots, on and on and on. I just think from a consciousness level, it matters. And the other part is you cannot read a book like I read called Project Animal Farm by Sonia Faruque and not realize that there is an ethical, moral issue for our treatment of animals, that we need to just look that ugly truth in the mirror and say, oh my gosh, this is really bad, and kind of choke on the chicken unless you know it was ethically raised and there was some attempt on the part of the farmer to care. And there are good farmers out there. There are good farmers that are doing it on a large scale. So food is such a vast expanse. Fast food, you might say, you know what? I'm turning that blinker on far too many times to stop through the convenient, easy way to feed my family dinner and commit to that change. And believe me, there are resources out there that'll say it's cheaper. You can do it on a budget. You can eat healthy. Yes, you can feed a family of five on really flavorful beans and rice wrapped up in a delicious whole wheat tortilla. There are so many other ways you can do it. Potato pancakes, I mean, you name it. So food is a good place to start. Another good place to start, and one that I believe we all are either conscious of already or in just the weeks and months coming up will be really coming front and center, is water. Water scarcity, who's buying water rights, how much water are we wasting? Basically, right now, I hear my husband say all the time, we don't care about water because it's free. We don't pay for water in our state. We pay for the structure that it uses to bring the water to us, and the government structure that brings clean water to my house. I'm happy to pay for it because I just get to turn on the faucet anytime I want, flush the toilet anytime I want, take a shower anytime I want. But what's happening globally? And how can that make a difference in our lives? And my answer to that is, take a look at the number of people that die every day from the source being poor water, waterborne illnesses, waterborne diseases, whatever you want to say, whether it's a mosquito that came and bit you, it doesn't matter. Water is a topic that everyone needs to be concerned about. I hate to say the word should, but it's one that you might want to think about putting front and center on your radar. If you turn the water on and you walk across the room and you go into the refrigerator and you get a glass out of the cabinet, you've already wasted gallons of water. I do have family members that take 15 to 20 minute showers. And I'm like, really? The first thing I want to ask is, what do you do in the shower for 20 minutes? I can't even stand sitting in a bathtub. So learn about water. There's Food and Water Watch. There are ways to just learn how the drought is going to impact us, what it's going to mean if we can't buy almonds anymore because they're water-intense users. I want my almonds. And what our shelves will look like soon. And I'm, you know, doing this show in July, excuse me again, and California is burning. There are places in the state of Washington that are burning, and the intense part of the summer isn't even here yet. So water is our most precious resource. From my research, I have learned you cannot live for more than 2 days without it. Not sure. You can Google that if you want to, but everyone agrees that we cannot live without water for any period of time. You can survive without food much longer. So water is another one. The next one on my big three list is energy. And it's, how do we source our energy? What kind of car do we drive? Are we doing anything to consciously change the way that our patterns of behavior have brought us to so far and be that conscious consumer? And the next car you buy, learning about its emissions, learning about how many miles per gallon you can get, because that's where all the power comes from. The power is in our purse. The power is not necessarily in legislation, but the power is really with the people. So I encourage people to think about energy. It's a hot debate around the country. And I very honestly and openly say, I live in the desert. I live where it's 110 degrees. And believe me, I want my air conditioner to work. So how can I support the local utility company to move towards more renewable energy? And still, let's be honest, folks, I'm really glad that I have my air conditioner to turn on when I come home, and literally it's 110 or 111 degrees outside. I just want to sit under where the air is blowing. So think about energy. It matters if you turn the light out when you leave the room. It matters if you flip your switches off for your, we all have those strips that we plug in 15 things to. So your energy strips, flip them off if they're connected to things that you don't need. There really is something called phantom energy that you can change the use, your use of that. And as Seth Godin said, if 5,000 people change their behavior and they tell 10 friends, we're already up to 50,000 of changing just one small habit. Change to CFLs or LED lights. The prices of them have come down just since I've been doing Mrs. Green immeasurably. And I forget how long an LED light can last, but I think longer than my lifetime. It's you're not going to be changing any LED lights out anytime soon. So think of energy in a more holistic sense and be conscious of that. And it just makes you feel good about it. It makes you feel like you're making a difference. It doesn't feel daunting. It doesn't feel overwhelming. Okay. One of my next favorite subjects is waste, especially food waste. It was shocking for me to find out from Dana Gunders, and this show hasn't even been aired yet. It was a pre-record. You know, 40% of the world's food is wasted. So 40% of the food we grow globally is wasted. What shocked me, and I don't think I can be shocked much anymore, is that in our homes is where most of the food waste occurs. 40% of the food we buy is wasted. And this is from Dana Gunders, the scientist, Dana Gunders, who had a research team really evaluating and measuring how much food we waste. And hopefully you're laughing because you go into the grocery store with your list. And how many of us stick to the list? There might be fresh strawberries and we're going to just buy a bin of those. Or, oh, look, lettuce is on special. I'm going to buy some of that because a spinach salad sounds so good. And then by Wednesday or Thursday of that week, you don't feel like having spinach salad or you don't feel like making anything. So you stick a pizza in the oven or you stop for a maybe healthy meal on your way home and your food is wasted. And there are ways to store it. There are the first number one thing is make your list before you go to the grocery store. Even if you're buying some really not so good stuff, stick to your list and you will help with the food waste problem, which is becoming, I love the word ginormous. It's my grandkids love for me to use the word ginormous. It's becoming a major topic of discussion for people at every level of the world's population. People in government are concerned about it. Our landfills, people are trying to figure out ways to convert waste into energy. But the number one and most important thing we can do is not waste as much food. And this book that Dana wrote about food waste and becoming a food warrior in your own home is great because she says, okay, if you buy a chicken and make chicken, what are you going to do with the leftovers? Make chicken enchiladas. And a really, you know, go-to, get some tools that will help your not wasting food easier. And as again, I said, it all starts with that's my list and I'm sticking to it. Okay, another one that I love to talk about, and it's in my book, Your Mother Called, Mother Earth, You Better Call Her Back, is about entertaining. And all of us entertain, some on a small scale, some on a large scale. And to me, it's a place that you can have the biggest impact because other people are coming into your home. And if you're not serving paper plates and you're using every dish in the closet, and if you have pitchers of water and they're looking for a bottle of water and you have glasses out, they're going to start noticing. It's all waste, and it's a way to save money. I always say there's really green in going green, so you can save money. You can save such an impact on the environment. People prefer cloth napkins to paper napkins. Believe me, it feels better. You like it. So you can start one step at a time, buying napkins on sale, collecting plates from Goodwill or wherever your secondhand store is your favorite, and start building up a collection. And it makes such a big statement. So I love to talk about it's your party and I'll cry if I want to. And that's the thing that my friends, I think, notice the most when I come over, like, oh, Gina, we don't have any water bottles. Look, I'm using real plates, and people are proud of that consciousness. So I cannot believe that I have only 4 minutes left, and there are topics I don't have the time to cover because some people said, can you talk for 30 minutes? I'm like, yep, I sure can. When it comes to preservation of the planet, I am as excited as any human being on the planet. So what can you do? It all comes down again to recap living consciously, and I don't think I knew what that meant 10 years ago. Almost everything we do from the minute we get up in the morning to the minute we go to bed has an impact or leaves a footprint on the planet. And if you call her Mother Earth, it might be easier for you because that makes me connect. Think about what you do when you get up in the morning. You first mostly go to the bathroom, so that involves flushing the toilet. You brush your teeth, water, and using a product. You get a drink of water because you can, and probably a cold drink of water. You make a cup of coffee that came from somewhere. The coffee came from somewhere. The coffee filter, the coffee maker came from somewhere. And oh, the products you use that you put on your body when you take a shower. And I am not a big product user. So you're using shampoo and conditioner and face wash and soap and blah, 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 blah. So those are all products that need to be manufactured, produced, and shipped. And then this is my go-to last thing that I want to ask your help for. I have a personal ask, and I am morphing. Mrs. Green's World is morphing. Our incredible team is helping us morph into what I call the PBS model for radio. And I am asking you, my call to action is to visit my website and to become a sustaining member of Mrs. Green's World. When Seth said 5,000 people can change the world, well, 1,000 people can change Mrs. Green's World to continue bringing you free, entertaining, hopefully useful, hopefully planet-preserving messages. And you can do it for as little as $8.34 a month, $50 a year. We made it so that there is a budget and an opportunity to really support the work, the important work of Mrs. Green's World and our team to bring messaging about the shape our planet is in to you in a way that's filled with hope, possibility, and change. On my website, there's an icon. It says preservation of the planet isn't an option. It's a necessity. Become a member today, and that's what I hope you'll do. Another thing that's free and easy, sign up to get my newsletter. Every other week for the past 8 years, I have written a newsletter. Fun factoids, sometimes they're heavy duty, sometimes I go on a rant, but become a member of Mrs. Green's World because we need, invite, and welcome your support. Make it a great green day, and here is to living consciously. Thank you, everybody. I'm filled with green gratitude.